Legal consequences arising from the policies and practices of Israel in the occupied Palestinian territory, including East Jerusalem. Well, Mike, that's the name of the landmark decision on July 19th by the International Court of Justice. The court declares that Israel's occupation of the Gaza Strip and the West Bank, including East Jerusalem, is unlawful. So, can you summarize this opinion and what makes it declared a landmark decision, as many officials claim, and whether there are, in fact, legal consequences for Israel, as we see featured in the very title of the opinion?
Jan, it's an advisory opinion, but it's advice asked for by the UN, and it's a comprehensive summary of legal conclusions that have been in place for, what, 60 years now. But it really organizes them and presents them in a way more thorough and complete than ever before. It basically holds that occupation, as you said, is illegal and it must end. It's an occupation of Palestinian land, including the West Bank, East Jerusalem, and Gaza. And not only does it call for an end to the occupation, but it calls for reparations for the Palestinians who've lived under Israel's occupation since it began in 1967. It declares Israel's mistreatment of Palestinians to be a form of segregation and apartheid. And it further ruled that nations like the U.S. cannot offer aid in support of these illegal occupations without violating international law.
That would be something I'd like to hear you say more about in a bit. But one aspect of the opinion that I found particularly of historical importance is that the court rejected the notion that Palestinian self-determination must be achieved solely through bilateral negotiations with Israel. And they added that this requirement has, quote, subjected Palestinians to violence, dispossession, and rights violations for 30 years. Can you comment on that aspect of the ruling, which I think is very much a commentary on the history of these so-called peace negotiations?
It reminds me of the law like 120 years ago when the US Supreme Court rejected the idea that workers could organize and rejected unions in different contexts because it said it violated the sacred right of contracts between two equals, Union Pacific Railroad and a worker named Joe Schmo. The idea that there's equality here and that we need to lead these two parties resolve their own disputes ignores reality, which is that Israel is not only far more prosperous, but it has the support of the United States in every way and is effectively an extension of the U.S. in terms of many policies it maintains. There's nothing resembling two equal parties sitting down in a room trying to hash out their differences. It's not like that.
And has dominion, oh, militarily, economically, and politically over all of those territories from the river to the sea.
That's a big basis of the opinion. The laws it relies on are the Geneva Convention, regular international law, previous UN resolutions. And it looked at the whole prolonged occupation. It looked at the transfer of civilian population. It looked at the confiscation of land, the exploitation of natural resources. It looked at how Israeli law has extended to all these areas, looked at the forced displacement of Palestinian populations en masse. It looked at all the violence against Palestinians and concluded that it was illegal, profoundly illegal, and cited several precedents. For each of these activities by Israel is explicitly banned by international law. And yet, each one of them has been carried out more or less for the entire 60-year period.
The court also said that Israel has an obligation to pay restitution for harm and, quote, the evacuation of all settlers from existing settlements. That's a tall order, because settlements is, I think, most people who follow the news around this and the genocide in Gaza and all of the oppression on the West Bank know that these settlements have extended and kind of strangled any Palestinian habitats, farming houses in that in the entire West Bank.
That's the whole point of putting those settlers there, is making it the reality on the ground is that this is now occupied by Israel. That's why Israel's devoted a huge amount of its state, and they're now financially in great peril because the present financial minister is an absolute far right, deep believer in the miraculous regime of Judea and Samaria, and he's funneling all the money that the state has over to these settlers and these settlements,
So
which
that
are.
is part of a colonial model, and some have argued that Israel's the last of the colonial projects that has also the support of much of the West, including, of course, the United States. But settlements, outposts of this sort, are part of the colonial project.
Well, that's what makes this opinion particularly valuable. It is, as they say, an advisory opinion. The International Court of Justice does not have any army to enforce its rulings, but it does legitimize all the Western governments that have recognized Palestine as a separate state, and it legitimizes the movement to boycott and divest from Israel. It legitimizes opposition to the whole colonial project in all its many forms.
So the US predictably responded that it was, quote, strongly discouraged by the ruling, and that it discourages parties from continuing with negotiations around the ceasefire. I mean, that, of course, is predictable. It's a little softer than Israel's just flagrant dismissal of this and other rulings by the international courts, charging everyone with anti-Semitism, like the pattern of McCarthyism, where everyone becomes a communist. The weight of McCarthyism, the force of it, falls under the weight of its expanded accusations. Now, every criticism, including the courts, is dismissed by Israeli officials as anti-Semitic.
They go beyond that, Jan. The response now has been shows the fractures within Israel, because the government immediately dismissed the ICJ ruling. Netanyahu called Jerusalem our eternal capital, and he referred to the West Bank as the land of our ancestors, referred to it as Judea and Samaria. So we're seeing the kind of secular, semi-democratic Israel that we've known is gradually morphing at an accelerated pace, certainly since October 7th, into a state of fundamentalist religiosity. And 500,000 people in Israel have left since October 7th. Those 500,000 people are generally prosperous, capable people. It's not easy to migrate to another country. That would be the equivalent of 15 million or 20 million people leaving the United States. Israel is seriously fractured by this split between the old timers and the new timers, and
They've lost the narrative that's been so central to liberal Zionism in the US and other places in the West, that
exactly.
Israel, with all its faults and problems, is a kind of beacon of democracy in the Middle East. And if you continue with the peace negotiations, that these problems can be solved within the framework of Israel as a Judeo-nationalist project. So there's a lot of debate about what kinds of reforms, what kinds of changes would be required, I mean, to really achieve any form of meaningful democracy in Israel and justice for Palestinians. But the rulings or the opinions of the court seem to require quite a bit, and it's a heavy lift for Israel to meet the demands of the moment. What do you think the consequences of this or the effects of this ruling are?
I think it goes a long way toward delegitimizing Israel as it's presently constituted. It does so comprehensively. It relates to all kinds of international law that is binding in a variety of contexts, economically, in every way, politically, the criminal law. All it's all there, and it's all comprehensively put, and it's all very emphatic. And the fact that it is, as you say, a heavy lift to undo all the occupation underlines how deeply penetrating Israel's occupation is. And I think it helps toward defining that as a massive illegality. And even as Israel slides in its international recognition toward being perceived as a state like all the other Middle Eastern states of religious fundamentalists, I think this opinion will show how profoundly illegal are its actions and how much they fly in the teeth of what has become known as a rules-based society. It's a term favored by the US. The actual rules that govern a rules-based society are being flagrantly violated by Israel in this occupation. And this opinion articulates exactly how that is, when it happened, and where it's happening.
You know, the BDS movement, the boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement in the US, it's been around for at least 20 years, and has struggled but has been revived and expanded since October 7th, and also been made illegal in many states. So BDS demands on the part of students and faculty and organizations in the US are confronting now the threat of losing critical funds if they support BDS aims. Yet this ruling actually calls for breaking or reviewing diplomatic, political, and economic ties with Israel, inclusive of business and finance, pension funds, academia, and charities. It also
Exactly. Require it not only legitimizes the BDS movement, it requires it. It said, no, this is the only way to respond. In fact,
Why
if you are
isn't this
not
headlines in the
responding,
New York Times?
it basically says if you don't comply with BDS, you are effectively supporting illegalities, and you therefore become a part of that illegality.
So, do you think activists around the country, including in academia, where the effects of this are quite severe, and are curtailing efforts to call at their universities to meet BDS demands, do you think this ICJ ruling could be of help to activists?
Absolutely. That's the area where it will help the most, because that's the area supposedly governed by rules. That's the area where the laws that are established are supposed to be upheld. So it's true, there are various southern states have made it illegal, but the international law, a law recognized by 150 countries, is completely on the side, or rather, is sort of summarized and articulated by this opinion. And that's a heavy chip to have in your. They did not exist for this upcoming academic year. This opinion will be, I predict, invaluable. It'll be used by different people in different contexts to help support all sorts of resistance to the Zionist domination of the faculties, the institutions and the customs to be followed in all the universities. We'll see what happens when students return this academic year.
Okay, we'll be following that closely. Thanks, Mike. This is Jan Hocken and Mike Snedeker talking today about the International Court of Justice ruling in July on Israel's occupation of Gaza and the West Bank, including East Jerusalem, and its declaration that this is unlawful, as well as the importance of that opinion and the details of that opinion for justice in Palestine organizing. And Mike, I encourage people to read. It's great reading to go online. It's a long read, but you just see the detailed legal and scholarly work behind the opinions of the court. So we'll continue to follow this.